There's something out here.
Only hell.
You think it's a UFO?
The next level of the Jordan Peele experience arrives.
Yeah, nah. Run!
I don't think they think you. Yeah. Keep you on lookout.
No.
Don't look.
Yeah. It's not what you think.
Nope.
Written and directed by Jordan Peele. In cinemas now.
A few familiar voices, and for those of you that can date a little bit farther back in your watching career, you'll notice that some of these voices are actually former players. So today we're going to talk to one of those former players, and it's Stephen Warnock, who had a career playing for a number of Premier League sides, Championship sides, League One sides, you name it. So Stephen, I want to thank you for coming on, and how you doing today?
I'm very good, thank you. Yeah, just getting prepared for a game tonight, actually.
Yeah, Stephen, so I want to ask you about your playing career, because obviously people might know you now from your commentary career, but obviously going back a couple of years, you only retired in 2018, which, relatively speaking, is not long ago at all. So your playing career, can you just kind of tell me some of the biggest moments, some of the highlights, and some of the teams you had the honor to play for?
So I grew up playing for Liverpool's academy. Started there at the age of 10, and then sort of made my breakthrough at the academy for the first team around about the age of 21. I had a series of injuries from the age of 16 to 19 where I broke my leg three times. So I was probably a little bit of a late developer into the Liverpool team because of injuries. I left Liverpool at the age of 24, signed for Blackburn Rovers, who were then in the Premier League. Played a couple of seasons with them in the Premier League and then moved on to Aston Villa. When I was at Aston Villa, I was then called up to the England squad to represent England at the World Cup and went to the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. And then I went on to play for teams in the Championship, Leeds, Derby County, Wigan Athletic. And yeah, like you say, finished my career 4 years ago and sort of started to shift into the media world now.
So what started that shift into the media world? Is it something that you always thought when you were playing, I want to do this after I finish my playing career? Or was it just something that happened in 2018? You said, well, I think I have this opportunity. Might as well take it.
Well, Liverpool have their own channel, Liverpool Football Club, have LFC TV. And I'd worked on that for a number of years, covering academy games, doing some first team games. But round about probably from the age of 30 onwards, and I was just doing bits and pieces in the background, but I never thought anything really about it. And then the last season I was in my career, I got a phone call from the BBC asking me if I'd like to go on and do a radio show. This was on a Tuesday night. Finished the radio show. Would you like to come back on Thursday? I was like, yeah, okay. Went back on Thursday. We've got a TV show on Sunday morning. Can you make Sunday morning? And I was like, yeah, I can do Sunday morning. And They just started giving me more and more work. And then I was in the car one day picking my girls up from school and I got a phone call from one of the bosses at the BBC and he just said, you're at that stage now where do you know what you're doing next season? Are you thinking of retiring? Are you going to carry on playing? And I was like, well, how come? What are you thinking? And he just basically said, listen, we really, really like you here at the BBC and we've got plenty of work for you. We think we can use you a lot. And if you were to retire, then we'd love to have you on board. And then literally in the car, I just went, okay, I'll retire. And it just came at me like that because my thought process was, well, someone else will take this opportunity if I wait another year. And this is an opportunity for me then to grab it with both hands, to have something to concentrate on. I think when a lot of players retire and come out the game, they don't know what the next step is because they don't tend to think about it too much. They try and concentrate so much on the playing career that they forget to think about the long term. And then off the back of that, I just started getting more and more phone calls because the BBC, as we know, is one of the most recognised names worldwide. Your voice is getting heard, you're getting seen by so many different outlets. And yeah, it just sort of snowballed from there.
So in terms of switching from a playing career to being in the media industry, how easy of a transition is that for you? I mean, obviously you're a former player, so you have the expertise and the knowledge of the game, but obviously the preparation, the actual things you're doing are clearly different. So just how easy of a transition was that for you?
It was easy because I'd done some previous work, as I said earlier on, for LFC TV, so I knew the background of it. But to actually understand going from radio to TV and how the co-commentaries work on things like that, when a replay comes in, what the directors are looking for, listening to directors in your ear while you're talking, these were all new things. And a lot of the time, you don't get the training, you're just put on the spot and asked to do something. So they're things that I've had to work at. I think the transition inside of coming out the game to go into the media world, I think just leaving the game in general is very difficult for players. They're used to a routine, they're used to a structure, and I'm freelance. So I could get a phone call next week saying we want you, or it could go dry for a couple of weeks. It could be chaos for 2 or 3 weeks. And this is the nature of the job. I think the long-term goal is to try and set up contracts elsewhere so you know what you're getting stability-wise, and I think that's where the structure comes into it with football. But now, I had some real tough times when I finished playing because of that lack of understanding of where I needed to be, what I needed to do. But from the football side and the media side, that is being probably a breath of fresh air to me. Many people have asked me, does it replace playing? It doesn't, but I actually enjoy it more. I love being in and around the games. I love being able to voice my opinions on things. People won't agree with them. People will agree with them. That's just the everyday life. But I absolutely love what I do now. I am very passionate about it. I want to be the best at what I do. I try and work as hard as I can to be the best. And hopefully I'm on the right path to becoming or maintaining being in the broadcasting world for many years to come.
Yeah, Steven, I think it's funny you talk about opinions, and I've had the honor to talk to a number of former players that now work in that commentary side. And something that I'm always curious about is how they avoid biases. And you already talked about your playing career and how you played for Premier League sides, Liverpool, Aston Villa, and Leeds, who at the time was not in the Premier League, but these are Premier League sides that we all know and you commentate today. So when you're calling these games that involve these teams, is it hard for you at all to avoid biases or, try to talk in favor of one player or one team over another?
You've got to stop that. You've got to try and cut that out completely. That's one thing I've learned straight away. If anything, I tend to lean the other way, just so people don't have that opinion of me. For instance, tonight's game is Aston Villa versus Leeds, two of my former clubs. Well, I can't sway one way or the other. I have to be impartial. So I just have to read the game as I see it, answer the questions that the commentator asks me with my opinion and what I think is the right thing at that time. Nothing will swing me either way. I've said many a thing about ex-teammates, ex-clubs as well, where they've probably got a little bit frustrated at me. But for anyone who is working in the industry or playing the game still, and people have an opinion, that's what they have to always remember, is that it is just an opinion. It doesn't mean that everyone else agrees with me, and that's what is set in stone. And I think that's one of the most important things. I've got friends who are playing now who say, just call it as it is. If I'm having a bad game, tell it as it is. Don't try and help me out and try and sugarcoat it, because in the end, everyone will see through you. You'll end up losing your job, and that's the worst thing that can happen.
So, Stephen, obviously a big part of playing and commentating is preparation. And I can only speak from my brief experience playing. I stopped playing when I was pretty much 17 years old, but still, up to that time, preparation was a big thing going into games, and I can imagine that's only exaggerated when you're playing in major games in the Premier League, or as you say, you did get to go to the World Cup with England. So, but at the same time, when you're in the media industry, preparation is equally important, I think. So, in terms of how you prepare for a game, how are there any similarities between what you do as a commentator versus what you did as a player, or are they totally separate?
No, they are separate. They're completely separate because you're trying to learn about the team's history, what's happened in the last 5 or 10 games, who's been the goal scorers, who's been the most creative players. I go on fans forums to see what the fans are thinking about the team, who they like, who they don't like, what their opinions are of the managers, the formations, what they're playing. So there's many sort of facets that come into it that you've got to be across. I think one thing I used to get a little bit caught up on, and I think a lot of people do get caught up on this, is stats. A lot of people are driven by stats. And I used to look at a lot of stats and I'd bring them into the game. And one of the commentators I was working with said, why do you keep on bringing these all the time? So I was like, well, in case I need them. And he said, that's my job. My job's to hand out the stats. Your job's to give us an insight as to what's happening on the pitch, why the players are doing it, how it's happening, what formations are changing, why they're changing those formations. And suddenly it changed the way I commentated. It changed the way I prepared for things, because you have to adapt within a game. You have to be able to understand what's happening in that game. You have to be able to call it straight away so that people see it. And I think that's the great thing about turning up to every game, is that every game's different. You have a basic formation of how you think teams are going to play, the structure of the team. But the managers will adapt during the game, and you've got to be able to adapt as well to them system changes throughout the game.
Co-commentators, they don't have to be former players, but you talk about these insights. Does being a former defender and being on the field, does that give you some sort of advantage in terms of what you see on the field from a commentator's perspective and in terms of changing formations, in terms of what players are doing?
Yeah, I think it does. What I would say is that some people don't see it. Some ex-players don't see it, and that's why they don't work in the media. I perhaps don't see things that coaches see when they're coaching players at the moment, because I'm not in that industry day in, day out. So it's a skill set, and trying to push that skill set across onto camera or as a voice that you can hear, and trying to help people understand why certain things are happening on the pitch, how to make that simple so that the naked eye that might not see that then starts to look for something different on the football pitch or the soccer pitch as to why things are happening. So I think that's it's something that is hugely important. But when you look at most of the commentators that we have, most of the commentators haven't played the game. They've studied it, they watch it as much as possible, and they do understand it. But they all say the same thing, is that you see something different that we don't see. And it's so interesting that we both have different views of the game and how it is.
So you've obviously had a pretty remarkable career, a long career as a playing in your playing days. So even though your media industry or media career, I should say, is relatively brief, I'm curious as to what some of your highlights are from calling games, whether that be for TV or radio.
Well, as soon as I retired and I got the job at the BBC, we had the World Cup in Russia, and I was fortunate enough to call a few games, which were just over in-house studios. So it was off TV monitors and things like that. But that went out on radio, which was huge. It's such a buzz to be part of that. I've now got a regular show on a Monday morning on Sky Sports, where I do analysis of teams and talk about the tactics that they might have employed at the weekend. And they're that's such a buzz for me. I think the highlight would have to be, though, was there's probably two highlights. One was calling my first international game on the radio, an England game versus Romania, to call a national team and to be able to talk through a game is just such a great sort of a highlight for me. But then I went to Qatar for the World Club Cup, where Liverpool played Flamengo, and that was just unbelievable. It was for BBC TV. It was a huge job for me, a huge opportunity. And obviously, because I grew up a Liverpool fan, I'm an ex-Liverpool player, to be involved in a game of such magnitude. I think we had over 13 million viewers that tuned in for that game, which is probably small compared to American audiences. But for us guys, that's a big audience for the UK. And that was a real highlight for me.
Something I find interesting, especially for the United States broadcasters, a lot of them have to call games, in studios rather than flying over to England to call these Premier League games. So you already talk about your experience calling games in-house, but I think it's much easier for someone in Europe and in England to call these games from the stadiums. So how much of a benefit is it to be at a stadium as a commentator compared to calling games from a monitor or just a couple of screens?
Well, the great thing is, obviously, we've had the pandemic recently, but before the pandemic and now, you get a feel from the fans as to what the game's about. What the when you walk, you park up and you walk across the car park. When you walk into the stadium, you get people stopping, you're talking to them, you engage with them, and you get that feel of what they expect from the game. Then you get the atmosphere. You're wondering how the players are playing under that pressure, so you can sense that straight away and get that feeling. Also, you can see what's going on all over the pitch rather than just what you see on the TV. We get to see every part of it, so we can look at formations. We can see the structure of the teams, which is hugely beneficial for the commentators and co-commentators. I've called a few MLS games myself already from England, from a TV monitor, and it's so difficult. You sometimes the pictures aren't great. You don't get to see the players very clearly, the numbers on the back, the movements that they're making. But when you're in that ground, you get that sense of you can pick up on people. You can see them in the warm-up. So when you talked about preparation and what you're looking for, often we look at player sort of movements, patterns, what boots they're wearing, colour of hair. These are all little notes that will go down next to that player. So if you are struggling to reference them, look down straight away, pick out orange boots, light hair, you know who it is. These are little things that really easy to pick up and in a stadium, but very tough to pick up over a monitor.
So, Stephen, looking down the road a little bit, you talk about earlier right now you're freelance, and obviously the end goal is locking in, you know, a longer-term deal. So how do you kind of go about that in terms of getting a deal? Is just, like you say, being recognized more and, you know, calling more games, or are there other paths you might have to take?
Yeah, I think that's it, really. Keep on honing in on your skills. Keep working hard. Keep calling games as well as you can. Keep on improving constantly. Part of my homework is watching games and listening to co-commentators, how they react to it and how I would react to it. So often I pause it as a goal's gone in. I'll react to it myself and what I think should be said. Then I'll listen to the co-commentator who I like or who I'm listening to, and I'll take notes from them to see what they've picked up on, why they've picked up on it. They're all little skills that I try and pick up. But long term, yeah, you'd love a contract with a company that are going to recognise your work and what you're capable of doing, know that you've got a certain amount of work coming each week, each month, and that's the long term.
Now, in terms of preference, popped in my head really quickly. It's just, you know, you've called Club World Cup games, and obviously people in the United States might know you from your Premier League calling games. So if you had a preference, would you prefer to stay in the club side and call games in England, or would you want to expand and look at Europe as a whole?
I think the big thing for me is that it would be not easier, but I'm passionate about the Premier League. I understand it. I've played in it. I can give my opinion on it because I know what it's about. I know the ins and outs of it. But European football, I do work on the Champions League, which is great. I love covering the Champions League because it's the best teams and I get to cover the best teams in world football. So for me, it's a mixture of the Premier League and the Champions League. I am learning Spanish, so in the long-term goal, would it be to cover some games out there, to work in Europe and do some work for Spanish TV and things like that? Who knows? I think short-term, you've got to look short-term to make sure that the long-term looks after itself as well.
Do you think that's part of the fun of it? You talk about how much you enjoy being a commentator. Do you think that's part of the fun is having the opportunity, you know, learn a new language and go work for a different kind of whole league in general? Can that just be like a whole different experience for you to enjoy?
100%. I think one of my long-term goals is to actually head out to America and be a broadcaster out there covering the Premier League. I think that's something that excites me. I think the great thing about football, soccer, is that it's worldwide. The opportunities are endless. I've actually just been out in the States myself, working for an academy out there, covering a soccer tournament. And I just got a buzz from it. I just loved it because we've all got the same passion. We all love we all love soccer. We all love football. We all want to see it played in the right way. I'm just very fortunate that I get to call games and some of the best games in the world.
Well, Stephen, that seems like a pretty good place to wrap up. And who knows, a couple of years down the road, might look forward to watching you on some of the American broadcasters here.
Fingers crossed. That'd be lovely. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate that, Stephen. Have a good one.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.